For a man of my age, my kids are young.
Yeah. Yeah, how old's your wife?
43.
You just got those kids in, squeeze them in quick then?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not going the full Mick Jagger and having them at... He's having another one at 72.
Wow, that's definite.
Have I met him?
I have.
I was at a party.
Yeah.
I was leaving.
Yeah.
And I heard from the balcony,
yeah.
Rob.
Hey, Rob.
No. And I looked up and he went, don't throw those bloody spears at me. I said, what? He was, don't throw those bloody spears at me. No, he was doing Michael Caine. But I had met, I had a close conversation with him, I would have said, what are you doing having a child at 72?
There you go. That's two people you will know, Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon, in The Trip to Spain. James Dempsey joins us once again. This is this show, by the way, is on it's on Sky Atlantic tonight at 10 p.m. So it's just two well-heeled people go to Spain.
Pretty much. So this is the third time they've taken a trip together.
Oh, is it?
Yes,
oh,
it is. So okay. The first one happened in 2010. And that sort of the premise around that one was that... Steve Coogan is playing himself and Rob Brydon is also playing himself. Versions of themselves, I should say.
Mm.
And in it, basically, in the first series, they sort of were going around the Lake District in Northern England and travelling around all these different restaurants. And sort of the kind of whole plot device was that they were... Steve Coogan had been asked by The Guardian or someone to write reviews and he was bored, so he asked Rob Brydon to go with him. And then in the second series, it was the trip to Italy. And at that time around, it was Rob Brydon who had been asked to do it and he asked Steve Coogan to go along with him. And this time around, I mean, it's a similar kind of setup, as you can imagine. So... the first two seasons are kind of an interesting show insofar as they are these 6 30-minute long kind of experiments in ad-libbing comedy.
Mm.
And you get these very long, these long scenes where they're just sitting, shooting the breeze about absolutely nothing of any consequence and doing, as we heard there, impressions. So both of them are very gifted impressionists.
Yeah.
And you'd want to like impressions because the whole show is built off the back of them telling anecdotes and doing impressions and trying to one-upmanship each other over meals that they sort of eat and drive around looking at the scenery and all that. There's nothing more to it than that, really. I mean, there's a tiny bit of kind of plot development around if they meet kind of women along the way or will they, won't they, you know, have
aren't
a,
they
have
both
a fling.
Married?
They are. Steve Coogan isn't, I think, in
all
it.
Right, okay.
It's all existing within its own universe as well. So
right, okay.
Although Rob Brydon's family features in it at the very beginning of the episode, I'm pretty sure they're not his real family. So they have created this layer of, you know, artifice on,
okay,
on a very naturalistic sense. So originally it started off as a six episode series. That was then actually edited down and released as a movie in the US and directed by Michael Winterbottom, who's quite a well-known British director,
yeah,
by 24-hour party people or whatever, 9 songs, that kind of thing. So the same thing happened with the second one, and I presume the same thing's going to happen with the third one. It gets a theatrical release in the US. The first season also won Steve Coogan a BAFTA for Best Actor in like a Comedy and was nominated for Best Sitcom. Now, it's not... It's kind of very HBO-y is how you would describe it, in the sense that this is not, you know, laugh a minute, set up, punch, joke, you know, comedy. And when you are approaching this, you have to sort of really indulge what it is, because I mean, this is sort of the antithesis of what modern TV is supposed to be, in the sense that it's about these two really wealthy white straight guys driving around eating really fancy meals in a Land Rover, you know.
Sounds great, actually, yeah.
So you have to be, you know, and there is nothing wrong with that, you know, in when it's self-aware, and that is what this is. So it is very funny, but it's not hilarious, you know. It is not, it's kind of warm and scoffing humor, and the humor is in the interplay between the two of them, particularly in this third season, as they're going through Spain, as you can imagine. They're talking a lot about times that they've previously spent in Spain, and Steve Coogan is telling anecdotes that Rob Brydon is like, yeah, I've heard this before, kind of thing. And they make kind of cultural references that it's quite funny. Like, they make cultural references that I think a lot of people maybe under the age of 40 or 30 wouldn't even get it all. Like, there's quite a big joke in the first episode about how they're in their prime, and Steve Coogan says, yeah, I could play Gene Brody.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how many people, you know, would know
yeah.
the prime of Miss Gene Brody, really. So it's an interesting piece of television that isn't for everyone. But I think if it is for you, you'll love it.
Right. Okay. The fact that they're in Spain, is of that any relevance at all?
It is and it isn't. Like, the food and scenery and the travel log part of it are, you know, sort of like the MacGuffin. They're what drives the plot, what has them going around. Mm. But really what you're watching for is just the kind of banal conversations the two of them have between them.
Okay, that's just a device to get them talking.
Exactly, yeah. So, now, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think they're in Santander in the first episode. I think that's where they take the ferry, bizarrely, actually. And they arrive there. And it looks beautiful, and Spain looks great, and they visit these prehistoric caves where there are drawings. So it has a kind of... it does have a sort of travelogue sensibility to it. But that is completely secondary to actually just the kind of... Mm. Polite comedy of manners taking place between these two friends, because that really is what matters. At the same time, they say nothing of really major consequence, so it is very light, simple stuff.
Yeah. Do they talk to the camera? Do they acknowledge cameras
no.
are there?
No, the camera is not there. So there's no breaking the fourth wall.
Okay.
It is a traditional sitcom without kind of any of the other trappings of a sitcom.
Yeah, because I was thinking, does it compare to, you know, Travel Man, the Richard Iowati thing?
I mean, I see how you would make that comparison. No, it is, you know, it is like scripted fictional TV, but... I suppose it's drawing on the fact that these two comedic actors are known, first of all, as friends of each other. Mm. Secondly, are known as sort of very natural and ad-libbing actors. So I think it's pretty much entirely improvised. They probably have it's probably like a bit like Curb Your Enthusiasm in the set, where they have a concept of what they need to get across, but then the rest of it is just pointing the camera at them.
I suppose, you couldn't say, here's unknown comedian and we're going to send them to Spain
exactly.
to ad-lib. It has to be those two people. The fact that it's on Sky Atlantic now wasn't the B previously, and does that make any difference to it?
I don't think a bit. So I've only seen one episode, and that was, you know, 22, 23 minutes of that. So I can't really, and I actually didn't see the trip to Italy at all. I only saw the trip back in 2010.
Right.
And that was a really enjoyable, funny thing to watch, but it's the kind of thing that you need to watch once in your life and then pretty much never think of ever again. But that's not a major criticism. If you're going to spend 20 minutes in front of the TV, you might as well have nice, pleasant 20 minutes of TV.
Yeah. Steve says, I love The Trip, one of the best programs I've seen this decade. I love the scene in series 2 where they're singing the Alanis Morissette song Iota in the mini driving through Italy. Amazing television. Steve,
I read today that I haven't seen The Trip to Italy, but apparently it was so influential that they managed to get Jagged Little Pill back into the charts after that episode aired.
Okay. Somebody else though says it's very boring, people. Very, in capital letters. So, you know, mixed reactions there. Right, a few bits of TV news. Another Marvel superhero is making it to telly. Squirrel Girl? Ah, come on.
Now, so I actually I'm intrigued by this. So Marvel are going all out on TV at the moment. They just wrapped up Legion, which I talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Which I think on the balance of payments was more interesting than it was good. But parts of it were very, very good.
Yeah, I'm watching it. It is interesting. At least if only for their approach to it.
Yes.
No one's wearing Lycra. And it's more like about his
psyche.
It's
very visually interesting.
Yeah.
But I sometimes just wish they'd hurry up with the plot a bit.
Yes.
It would be my criticism. I don't think we're going to have this issue with what is going to be called New Warriors, which is a show built around a comic book character who was essentially created as a joke 30 years ago. And her name is the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. she's Doreen Green, and she was born with like a prehensile tail and the power and agility of squirrels and the ability to talk to squirrels. And she was created as a joke by, I can't remember, I think it's Ditko. He's the guy who created Spider-Man anyway.
Okay.
And she basically has never been beaten in a fight. She beats everyone within the Marvel Universe, and that's the joke. And then she was relaunched about 2 years ago as a new comic series that's actually really, really funny and very well regarded. So now Marvel are kind of pushing ahead to make a new TV show with it, and it's going to be about her and sort of six other young Avengers-y style people going around doing all that stuff. But the thing about Squirrel Girl is that it's hard to say, is that she does have a bit of kind of sort of a cult following, and in the past Anna Kendrick, the actress, has expressed an interest in playing her, but I don't think you'd see her in the small screen. Who you might see and who has expressed an interest is Shannon Purser, I think that's her name, who is better known as Barb from Stranger Things.
Okay.
Who has also said she'd like to play her. So it's just, it's going to be a kind of a bizarre comic book series about a, you know, a woman with the power of squirrels, but it works.
Yeah. She has, somebody says, what does she have? The ability to find nuts. Presumably she has. Now, they're going to do something to The Walking Dead. Hasn't The Walking Dead finished?
So The Walking Dead finished its seventh season just over the weekend. Now, I have been stuck in the past on The Walking Dead in a sort of loathe it but can't break free relationship. And I actually found the season finale so bad that I'm not watching it anymore. And I even cancelled my subscription to The Walking Dead comic, even though it is the cheapest one I buy. But I just was so frustrated with the whole thing. And I'm not the only one, because the season has seen massive drops in its ratings. So they actually are kind of thinking about what they're going to do. And the reality is, in the comic book series, they jumped into the future by several years, and they're at a point in the TV show where they kind of need to decide if they're going to do that or not, because that creates some problems with the fact that some of the cast members are younger, and how are they going to age them up, or will they age them out? And then also there's the issue of, you know, people are just abandoning it in droves. It has gone from one of the most successful to kind of not anything to majorly worry about in terms of cancellation, but it has lost a good chunk of its viewers. So they're kind of humming and hawing about when they're going to do this, and I would say, based on what I read, it'll be at the end of next season. So we have another season of misery to get through, but fortunately I have broken free.
Right, okay. And is it diminishing returns, because it's kind of largely the same story over and over
it
again?
Is largely, I mean, it's cut from the same cloth every season. They meet some kind of antagonist, they squabble over resources, they constantly kill off the people who are not white. It's a running joke in observers of the show that if you're black you don't live. In The Walking Dead you immediately just get killed. So they have major problems with the show that they need to work on, because people are abandoning it.
Somebody's texting to say, sorry, did he say the cheapest comic he buys? Just how many is he subscribed to? I bow down to your reviewer's dedication to pop culture, which is considerable. Is James looking forward to Gotham Series 3? It's gotten good reviews in the US and is back on RTU Sunday night at the peak time of 1:30 a.m. says Jared. Set your clocks.
I have not actually seen a single episode of Gotham, which I heard started off well and then kind of fizzled out, but has sort of, you know, gotten its mojo back, we'll say. What I will say is, when it comes to TV shows, DC tends to do much better than Marvel in the TV production. It goes inversely in the movie world, but that is obviously a DC property because it is Batman. It's pre-Batman. It's sort of a prequel to Batman becoming Batman when Batman is a child, Batboy. Okay. So I haven't seen any of it, but I'm intrigued.
I watched that Mrs. Brown's show on Saturday that James reviewed last week just to dip my toe in. Oh my God, I laughed so hard at one stage that wine came out my nose. They had Philip and Holly out on with their mammies. I really think that Brendan and Carol put them at such ease. We really got to see what they were like as people, much better than those formatted chat shows we've all become used to. I think Brendan could become the next great Irish success a la Graham Norton. I think he already is other than becoming Pope or something. I don't know how much more successful he could get. Somebody else wants to know, what did your TV guy make of Catastrophe? I think that finished during the week.
So I didn't see the final episode.
Neither have I, because I've recorded it but I haven't got to the end yet. I watched it the other night and still not right after it. I don't think any other show I have seen recently has hit the nail on the head with relationships as well as this show has. It was only on for 6 episodes and now it's over. I don't know how long I can wait for a new series. They say. It does, certainly from the ones I've seen. It feels actually better plotted across the series than the previous ones,
I would also say, and I don't mean this necessarily as a criticism, I'd say it's actually slightly less funny than previous seasons. It's less joke heavy. It's more kind of exploring their relationships in a more frank and funny way rather than just funny way. And I think that is interesting. But I'm very intrigued by the last episode because I know, or the 6th episode, because that has Carrie Fisher in it.
So there's a payoff there anyway. Yeah. Actually, yeah, you're right, because I found that the first series, I found that slightly irritating because there was a smart answer to everything. Yeah. Now I don't. sites. Rich from me probably saying that, but you know, they never gave a straight answer to anything, which started to irk after a while because you didn't get to know them. They do less of that now.
So, definitely.
Yeah, that's a good observation. And somebody wants to say, someone wants to know, just for the crack, can you ask your TV reviewer if he knows where the term MacGuffin comes from? Says Steve and Kerry, who say that they do. Well, of course James knows. He's going to tell you after the break.
When a disco producer finishes a track, he'll invite prominent club DJs to give input. If a DJ likes a track, he might play it in his club. But remember, the DJ's own reputation is at stake.
And believe me, the serious hitmakers care about their rep, but they don't got time to listen to every new disco track. That's why Leslie started the record pool. She listens, and then once a week, the DJs gather at the pool to hear her creme de la creme, because she's got the taste.
There you go. That's The Get Down. That's streaming from tomorrow on Netflix. And we want to be clear here. This isn't season two of The Get Down. Oh, no. This is season one, part two. Big diff.
So they released the first six episodes not even a year ago. I think it was sometimes towards the end. Well, probably maybe it was a year ago. I don't really remember is the truth. But it has not had a good reputation, The Get Down. It is created by Baz Luhrmann of you know, Moulin Rouge and Romeo and Juliet fame. And it is his sort of take on the origins of hip hop music in the 1970s in the Bronx. And before The Crown came out and took its title as the most expensive TV show ever made, I'm pretty sure The Get Down was considered the most expensive TV show ever made. Netflix poured, you know, $100 million easily into this.
Crikey.
And it has not necessarily been a good return on investment for them, because critically it was met, I think, with a fairly cool reception. As for fan-wise, you never know with Netflix because they don't tell you how many people are watching their shows. But just in terms of anecdotal evidence, I can't really remember anyone talking about it at any great length or even seeing it crop up in other things.
Actually, Paula says The Get Down, more like The Let Down.
I wish I'd thought of that line anyway. So I have to admit, the first season, it also suffers from that thing which I hate the most, which is episodes that are considerably longer than they need to be. Every episode is an hour. It could at least be 10 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
And sometimes that is, sometimes that's the right decision to make. However, if you stuck with the first six episodes, which tell the story of this guy named Zeke, who is sort of a kind of a thinker living in the Bronx who discovers he's brilliant, sort of lyricist and great at spitting rhymes and essentially a proto-rapper. And his girlfriend, who's Mylene, who wants to be a disco queen but is the daughter of Pentecostal evangelical Christians and, you know, has the conflict of that. If you stuck with the six episodes, I think, you know, you were rewarded by enough visual sort of spectacle and panache, because, you know, they spent $100 million on this and it looks like it, in the sense that they had these great big, musical set pieces with lots of extras and dance moves and that Baz Luhrmann style of intercutting stories in such a way that, you know, there are these very fast movements of the storyline amongst all the different parties all interwoven. And that all works great. The problem is, it is also so unbelievably overstuffed. You know, when I went to write down the name of the characters, I mean, I could have taken 20 that I would consider essential characters for the show.
Oh, God.
So it is spread very thin across, across the hours TV. So when I came back to watching the first, I've seen two of the remaining five episodes, I was sort of a bit like, oh, do I remember who anyone is first and foremost? And they do a nice job of reminding you who everyone is very quickly. But then I kind of remembered, do I care who anybody is? And that was the bigger issue. The other thing is, I found with the first two episodes, they were retreading a lot of the same sort of storylines that I've gotten in the first 6 hours again, which are Mylene struggling with her Pentecostal father and sort of the interrelationships between Zeke and the other Get Down brothers being a bit cagey. And I really kind of felt they could have moved things along a bit better and sort of updated things a bit more, because we don't know if we're going to get a second season of this. The other thing they've done creatively here is that in the second run of the first season, they've actually changed a lot of the episodes to include a lot of animation that wasn't in the first episode, the first run. Now, that is probably to save money on reshoots that structurally needed to be put into the episodes and that they, you know, had already spent the bank on. So you get these long animated sequences that both look, I think, cheap and not in keeping with the style of the show, which is this very avant-garde kind of fantasy 70s look. So it just feels a bit tonally out of place. Again, I don't want to be completely critical of it, because when the music gets going, you know, you'll be tapping your toes. Mm. But in order to get there, you have to sit through a lot of kind of silliness. When watching it this time, I was really struck by how much this is just the most glamorous, trumped up teen soap opera I've ever seen. You know, if you compare it to something like 13 Reasons Why, which I talked about last week, or Archie, or any of the, you know, even going further back to things like, you know, Dawson's Creek or something like that, you're treading the exact same story beats here of teenagers wanting to discover themselves. But instead, they've just added extra layers of money on top of it. And I don't know if it's really worth it.
Yeah. Actually, no one's texted in to defend the Get Down, interestingly enough. On a completely different matter, though this is, you may have a take on this. Do either you or your television reviewer ever inquire about a new acquaintance's television show preferences as a way to gauge if there's somebody worth getting to know? I find it's pretty foolproof. For example, if someone doesn't like The Office UK, they are 100% shit for brains. Do you make glib and not so glib judgments like that, James?
I mean, I think I'm actually a pretty judgmental person, so I would say that I would easily make snap judgments based on things like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So I support you.
Yeah. Speaking of judgments, here's a program that judges you every second you watch it, because you won't know any of the answers. University Challenge.
With an average age of 25, let's meet the Wolfson team again.
Hi, my name is Justin Yang. I'm from Vancouver, Canada, and I'm studying for a PhD in public health and primary care.
Hi, I'm Ben Chowdhury from near Cockermouth in Cumbria, and I'm studying natural sciences.
And this is their captain.
Hi, my name is Eric Monkman. I'm from Oakville, Canada, and I'm studying for a master's in economics.
Hi, I'm Paul Cosgrove. I'm from Cookstown in Northern Ireland, and I'm studying for a master's in nuclear energy.
Let's not waste valuable time with a recitation of the rules. Let's just crack on with it. Fingers on the buzzers. Here's your first starter for 10. Which city gives its name to the battle during which Horatio Nelson declined to heed Admiral Sir Hyde Parker's...
Walter Monkman. Copenhagen.
Correct.
There you go. That's University Challenge. And a lot of you may, who've never watched University Challenge, may have seen bits of that on Gogglebox, especially featuring that chap Monkman. He seems to be genetically engineered as a clever person.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that he sort of embodies everything you would think about a nerdy Canadian, specifically. Yeah. He just has this specific Canadian-ness to him. So yeah, I just picked University Challenge because it is the grand final on Monday night. And if you're going to watch one episode of it, you might as well watch the grand final, because it's a lot of high-stakes pressure. What is interesting about University Challenge to me as a quiz show is that it is frustrating in the sense that you don't know many of the answers. And even... you don't even almost get a chance to even formulate an answer in your head, because they're answered so quickly that, you know, they interrupt the question before it's even finished.
Yeah.
But the sort of the absolute...
Sometimes you don't understand the answers to many questions.
Yes, I 100% agree. But what is intriguing about it is it exists as this sort of, you know, putting... higher learning on the pinnacle of TV. This is higher learning at the pinnacle of TV, as nerdy, you know, weird fact-knowing people who have limited social skills but can push a button very quickly. And when you are sort of comparing yourself to them, first of all, it has this amazing social media life, University Challenge. People love commenting on it and live tweeting it throughout. But when you're watching it, even though you only manage to answer a handful of questions yourself, it's really personally gratifying, you know, if you manage to answer a question correctly. Or if you're watching it and they are doing a round about something in pop culture and that is completely it exposes holes in their own knowledge gaps about things that you are capable of. It's really sort of rewarding, because it's this great level playing field, even though it's not level. Yeah. But it's just... I think it's an interesting show because it actually is on the air for such a long period of time. This kicked off in July last year, this current season, which is the 46th season of University Challenge. It is also, I didn't know this, it used to be on ITV before it jumped ship to the BBC in the 90s. So this is actually now the point at which the BBC from this July on will actually have had more seasons than ITV, because it began in the 1960s. So it is this long-running, high-pressure... sort of exercise in exposing all of the things you will never need to know.
Yes.
But it's so quick and fast and enjoyable to watch that because it's all contained into one 30-minute segment, and you don't need to watch it every week, that when you happen upon it, it just makes for really enjoyable TV.
Yeah. Paraphrasing what you just said there, someone texted in to say, intelligence is overrated. Look at the heads in them. lots of people texted in agreeing with you about The Walking Dead and indeed Catastrophe. One question, I've never heard of this show. Have you ever watched Detectorists? Best program ever on Netflix.
Yeah, so that was, I think it was a Sky Arts sitcom. It was definitely on Sky with Mackenzie Thing from The Office and that other guy whose name I can't remember. But there are about two guys who go around with metal detectors, I think, searching for
right.
things.
Okay.
I haven't seen it, but anything I've ever seen about it has been high price.
I once walked out of a first date when the guy told me he couldn't stand Better Call Saul. There's just no point in going ahead with any relationship after that. So there you go. People do it all the time. And oh my God, is that the time? Because James was born the backside of him with this long exposition of where MacGuffin came from and Alfred Hitchcock and some obscure scriptwriter no one ever heard of. But we've run out of time. James, thanks very much for coming in to us.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.